This episode of the Jim Strouse Show was challenging to produce due to several technical issues during the recording process. So much so, I could not produce it as part of my regular video series. Nevertheless, the information provided by my guests was so jaw-dropping, amazing that I had to get the information out. So, who was my guest? Well, my guest was IQ Rasuli, who is no stranger to controversy. I spoke to him a few times before, but to date, I have yet to see his face. Why? Well, his biography will give you some insight. Now, this is a quote. All right. IQ al-Rasuli is a pen name to protect myself from being murdered for revealing the truth about Islam, the cult of Muhammad. I was born in Baghdad, Iraq. My mother tongue is Arabic. My parents sent me to Europe to study, where I was able to access libraries and get informed. I was intrigued to find out if the biblical names and verses in Muhammad's Quran corresponded with those in the Bible. I was utterly shocked to find out not only did they not correspond, but that they were also totally wrong, misleading, and uninformative. This launched me on a 30-year research. This launched me on to 30 years of research, during which I had to study and absorb not only Muhammad's Quran, but also the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament. By the time I finished, I had absolutely no doubt, based entirely on the Islamic sources, that Muhammad was a charlatan and a pathological liar, and most important of all, that his God, Allah, is most definitely not the same as the God of Abraham, Moses, and Jesus, thus instantly discrediting Muhammad as an alleged prophet, as well as the impossibility of a divinely revealed Quran. Now, do you have an idea why he keeps his identity secret? It should be blindingly obvious. Well, because just based on that alone, some people quite literally want him dead. In our time together, IQ and I discussed a lot of things. Among them were these. China and Islam, they are the biggest threats to America, in his opinion. The deadly difference between Sharia compliant and non-Sharia compliant Muslims. The history of conflict within the Islamic tradition. Why Muslims have more success converting prisoners in jail than Christians. We talked about something called abrogated verses in the Quran. We talked also, is it true that to be a friend to Jews and Christians is to be an enemy of Islam? That definitely came up in our conversation. Also, this curious thing he said to me, he said that, that there's nowhere in the Quran, or rather the hijab, the headdress that women wear, that Muslim women wear. He said that there was no citation of a hijab inside of the Quran itself, which I thought was intriguing because I'm so used to, I associate the hijab with the Muslim faith. So I was really taken aback when he said that the hijab was not in the Quran. And also, among many other shocking things he said in our conversation, he pointed out that Putin, yes, that Putin, was a Christian, which really when it goes against everything I've been hearing about him in the media, for sure. Our chat went on for about an hour, and it could have continued for twice as long, maybe even three times as long. This is one episode you do not want to miss, and as you listen, you'll see why I had to get this information out. It's so, so intriguing. All right, let's get on into it. Buckle up. This is going to be a bumpy ride. Hello, sir, and welcome to the Jim Stroud Show. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm IQ Rasuli. This is not my real name. It's a pen name because I have to take care of my security. My forte, my subject is Islam. And for 14 years, I've been challenging Muslims to take me on or to prove me wrong. I have $1.5 million worth of challenges on the internet and in my documents and articles to prove anything I say about Islam wrong. And so far, nobody has done that. Google my name, Al Rasooli, A-L-R-A-S-S-O-O-L-I, and you'll find out anything you want to know about Islam. And within a day, you know more about Islam than the Imams of Islam. That's who I am.
And that is.
But I'm not stuck on the Islam. I deal also with all political items, whether it's in Europe, America, Asia, or Latin America, or Africa. That's my forte. Back to you, sir.
Most definitely, most definitely. And you definitely have a strong forte. You're no stranger to controversy. And I thank you for meeting with me again. I know that you've been a guest on my podcast, but this is my TV show. So I appreciate you being here for that.
My pleasure. My pleasure, really.
I want to start off a little differently than we have before. And normally we go right into issues around Islam, and I certainly want to revisit some of those. But I want to talk about the war drums that are beating right now. It looks like the media and the Biden administration are doing all they can to get us to war over Ukraine's borders while ironically ignoring our own borders here in the U.S. How do you think the situation would have unfolded with Russia, Ukraine, all of that, if Donald Trump was running things right now?
Well, first, I want to tell you something.
Please.
98% of Americans have absolutely no idea of what I'm going to tell you. In the year 2000, Bill Clinton met with Putin in Europe. And Putin suggested to Bill Clinton that Russia should join NATO. Anybody mentioned that to you ever in life?
No, this is my first time hearing this.
All I'm saying to the people who are listening, Google it while I'm talking to you, and then call and show that I'm lying or not lying. I never lie. I don't have to lie because the facts and the truth are infinitely more powerful than all the lies. So you see, Russia never looked to the East. Russians love Americans. This is a fact. They want to emulate Americans. Yes, I know. You see, you look surprised.
I am looking surprised.
Don't be surprised. We're not talking about politics here. We're talking about ordinary human beings.
Okay.
Russians look to the West. They don't look to China. They don't look to India. They don't look to Afghanistan. They look to the West. Russia was always part of the West. By the way, under Tsarist Russia, the language of the court was not Russian. It was French. Again, how many Americans know this? Zero. Most probably zero. It was the French.
Wait a minute, the official language of Russia was at one point French? Is that what I heard you say?
What I said is the Russian Tsar and his entourage, the political elite, spoke French to each other, not Russian. But I'm getting at they look to the West. Russia was always to the West. The only difference was under communism. But communism was not only a military machine, it was also an ideological enemy of America. They wanted to destroy America because it represented the capitalism. Russia under Putin would have joined America, would have joined Europe 22 years ago, if they allowed her. Trump got on extremely well with Putin. Why? Simple. Both of them know that they have enough weapons of mass destruction to eliminate each other. Putin respected Trump. Trump respected Putin. Putin does not respect America today under Biden. There is no respect. There's nothing, zero. And what Biden has done with Europe against Putin is also wrong. How many Americans know that the Crimea, which was taken over in 2014, under who? In 2014, who was president?
Obama?
Thank you. Under Obama. Why did Putin do it under Obama and didn't do anything under Trump? Why is Putin doing whatever he's doing now under Biden and he didn't do anything? Trump never went to war. Trump was the only president that he did not get into a war situation. Why? Because they respected him. Even the Iranians respected him. They feared him. He was more unpredictable than they could possibly imagine. And they knew if he wanted to go to war, he would obliterate them. That's why they didn't challenge him. And until today, they are challenging Biden. Biden is groveling to the Ayatollahs. Why is he groveling to the Ayatollahs? Why is he going to these people, groveling to them? What is the advantage for America? There is zero advantage for America going for the nuclear deal. Zero advantage. Because Iran has people, her proxies in Yemen against America, in Syria against America, in Iraq against America, Hamas against America, Lebanon, Hezbollah is against America. So what is the advantage? Zero advantage. Why is Putin doing it? Biden doing it? Because the purpose, the single purpose of Biden's existence is to dismantle everything that Trump did. That's what he's doing.
Hmm.
And even then, he's causing more death and destruction for America. You have over 2 million illegals crossing your border. I've already crossed your border.
Right.
Do you have any idea how many of them are terrorists? You have no idea.
No, not at all.
And the people who will pay the price will be the American people, the ordinary men and women in the street. You wait and see. There will be an act of terror which will make the Twin Towers like foreplay.
You think it'll happen very soon? Because that's one of my strong concerns because of the so many illegals coming into our country.
It can happen at any time. People don't realize, as I said, anything I'm revealing to you now, most people have never heard of it.
Right.
Putin is a born-again Christian. He's not a communist.
Oh, say that again. Because the way he's depicted in our media, he is like the number one boogeyman right now. They put more attention on hating Putin than they do on the threat of China, which I think is really our number one enemy these days. But the media will have to believe it's Russia.
Correct. There are two existential threats to America and to the world. Only two. Islam and China. Islam and China are the greatest threats to America and the West and the world. Only two. Islam and China. Why Islam? Because they're spreading terror all over the world. By the way, the most persecuted people on earth today are Christians. The most persecuted people on earth today are not Jews. Christians. By whom? By Muslims. They are killing them by the hundreds and thousands per week in Africa. You don't hear that in the news media. They never mention it in the Western media at all, not in Europe and not in America. Why are they silent? Why is the Pope embracing Islam and not Christianity? I'm not only picking on the Pope, by the way. Every single leader in the Western world, Christian leader, whether Presbyterian, Anglican, whatever, they don't mention any relationship between Islam and terror. Why? Jihad is mandated in the Quran in chapter 2, verse 216. It is mandated. It's not negotiable. The Quran says to the Muslims, to be a true Muslim, you have to be a jihadi. What does jihad mean? To kill the infidels. And who are the infidels? Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, atheists, agnostics, 80% of humanity, which is not Muslim. It's in plain Arabic. And even when you translate it to 80 languages, it is exactly the same meaning. And yet, everybody ignores this fact. Everybody ignores it. You have Rashida Tlaib in Congress. You have Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar wears the hijab.
Yep, she does.
She does. Does any American understand what it means? The fact that she's wearing the hijab means she is Sharia compliant. What does Sharia compliant mean? She is a fundamentalist Muslim. That means she one who believes in Muhammad's Quran and Muhammad's Sunnah. Muhammad's Sunnah are the traditions about Muhammad, what Muhammad believed in, what his philosophy was, how he treated women, how he treated his enemies, how he deceived them, how he murdered them, how he plundered them, or how he raped them. She is a fundamentalist. What does that mean? Every single Muslim who is Sharia compliant, I repeat it again, every Sharia compliant Muslim is mandated in the Quran to hate and to murder every human being who is not a Muslim. It is mandated. It's not negotiable. It's not subject to misinterpretation or misrepresentation. It is mandated.
But I know there are a lot of Muslims in our society who are at least seemingly very conservative, and they're not planting bombs and trying to overthrow the country.
They're not Sharia compliant.
So there's a difference. There's a difference between Sharia compliant Muslims and, I guess, non-Sharia compliant Muslims. If you could elaborate further on that, because I know that, as you were saying, there are Sharia compliant Muslims who believe in killing all infidels. And I assume that those who are not Sharia compliant are the ones who do not want to kill all the infidels. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. But from the point of view, this is the irony here. From the point of view of fundamentalist Islam, the non-Sharia compliant Muslims are not Muslims, are not true Muslims. Are you with me? Look, it's like a Catholic. A Catholic who believes in the Trinity and who believes in sanctity of marriage is a fundamentalist. He believes in the foundations of his belief system. But how can he be a Catholic when he is fornicating outside? He can't be a Catholic at the same time. Are you with me?
I am.
From the religious point of view, he's out of the bloody picture. He fornicated. He can't be a Catholic anymore.
Because he's not following the strict rules of
Catholicism. Absolutely. A fundamentalist Muslim, a fundamentalist Jew, a fundamentalist Hindu, and fundamentalist anybody must follow the letters completely of the instructions. Mm-hmm. The minute they digress, they are not anymore part of the deal. So from the point of view, I'm repeating my words are exact all the time. From the point of view of Muslims, of Islam, a Sharia compliant Muslim is a fundamentalist Muslim, is a true Muslim. From the Sharia point of view, the Muslims who do not follow jihad, the Muslims who assimilate or integrate with European and American societies are not true Muslims. No Sharia-compliant Muslim can ever be a loyal citizen among non-Muslims. I know it's not acceptable to people to hear this, but I don't give a damn about the acceptable, not acceptable. I'm talking about facts. I deal with the fundamentals of a belief system. It is forbidden in the Quran for any Sharia compliant Muslim to be a friend of a non-Muslim or to be under the rule of a non-Muslim. It is prohibited. Simple. It's not complicated. Whether the West accepts it or not is irrelevant.
How could someone with a Western mindset sort of figure out the difference between someone who is Sharia compliant and someone who is not Sharia compliant? Because I've come across several people of the Muslim faith, and they seem peace-loving, cool people, far I can tell. How would one be able to even tell the difference? What are some warning signs I should look out for?
If they go to the mosque regularly, if their women wear hijab or niqab, they're fundamentalists. If he allows his daughter to associate with boys and girls of the Western societies, then they're all right. But if they forbid them, they're Sharia compliant. It's not complicated. Believe me, ask your neighbor who is a Muslim, a nice guy. Ask them one simple question. What do you call me? I'm not a Muslim. What do you, according to your Quran, what am I? He will have to tell you you're kafir.
A kafir.
A kafir is somebody who is an infidel, a non-Muslim. Yeah. A kafir is someone who is not a Muslim. It's an infidel. So if he is an honest person, he will tell you the truth. He'll tell you, from the point of view of Islam, you're a kafir. but I don't believe in it, he would tell you. Okay, which is fair enough. But it is in the Quran. It is not negotiable. It's not subject to misinterpretation or misrepresentation. In the Quran, it says 1400 years ago, Muhammad declared total war upon humanity, who is not Muslim. He separated human beings into two groups. Dar al-Harb, the territory of war, which is for the infidels. And Dar al-Islam, the territory of peace, which is the territory of the Muslims. But in fact, there was never peace in the territory of Islam. They always killed each other between the Sunnis and the Shia.
Hmm. Why is that?
Again, when Muhammad died, he did not indicate who will be the Khalifa, that means the successor. Okay, it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Had he said, for example, and he was dying, by the way, he was dying. I mean, he knew he was dying, but he never told them who should replace him. So what happened is a group of the Muslims believe that only the bloodline of Muhammad should be Khalifa. That means his cousin, Ali bin Abi Talib. And Ali bin Abi Talib was not only his cousin, he was his son-in-law who married his daughter Fatima. Are you with me so far?
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah. But the other group of people said no. Any Muslim who is fundamentalist and a good Muslim and a good leader can be Khalifa. From that day till today, 1400 years later, they are massacring each other for this point of view.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
In Iraq today, Sunnis are blowing up Shia in the mosques.
Right.
That's the easiest target. In Pakistan, they're doing the same thing. In Afghanistan, they're doing the same thing. And when Shia have the power, they blow up the ones in the Sunni mosques also. There was never peace in Islam, never.
So it's all about who's going to be in charge.
Absolutely.
So to speak.
Take at the moment you have Erdogan of Turkey. Erdogan, he wants to bring the Ottoman Empire back. The Ottoman Empire were Turkish people. They're not Arabs. They subjugated the Arabs for 350 years. Who liberated the Arabs? The British. In World War I, they liberated the Arabs from the Ottoman Empire. And the Arabs accused them of imperialism. For 350 years, the Arabs didn't have the brains or the backbone to go against the Ottoman Empire. The British liberated them, and then they call them imperialists. Again, I dare anybody listening to prove anything I say either wrong or untrue, which is really impossible, in fact.
Interesting, interesting. I want to get your viewpoint on this. The way we exited Afghanistan was an utter disaster, in my opinion. Utter disaster. I mean, a lot of Americans wanted us to leave. We just didn't want to leave that way. Certainly did not want to arm the Taliban the way we left as well. Now, the media, they have decided to turn the page, so to speak. So you don't hear anybody in the media talking about Afghanistan today or Middle East or not about Afghanistan so much. I think Sean Hannity still reports on it about the Americans left behind. But all the other outlets, you pretty much don't hear anything else about it. What do you think are the long-term ramifications of the way Biden has handled the Middle East, especially in terms of Afghanistan?
Well, look what's happening in Ukraine. Look, you don't have a news media. You have stooges you have criminals. By the way, the enemies, the worst enemies of the American people for the last 60 years have been the news media. They never tell you the truth. Never. And the word never, I repeat it a million times. They never tell you the truth because they are only repeating what the Democrats are telling them to do. Mm-hmm. They are stooges for the Democrat Party. They have always lied. They have always deceived. So the enemies of Americans internally are the news media, except for those who are telling the truth, sometimes like Hannity or Tucker Carlson, whom they call, they call them Nazis. They're not Nazis. They're telling the truth. And the truth, by the way, the truth is available. Do I read newspapers? I have not bought a newspaper in all of my life. Sounds ridiculous, but it isn't. Because newspapers lie. Do I listen to the BBC? Yes, I listen to the BBC. Do I listen to American news? Yes, but I also listen to the Russians, to the Germans, to the Japanese, to the Arabs, to the Chinese. I listen to all of them. And then I make up my mind based on all of them.
Yeah.
Many people don't have the time. So they think, honestly, that CNN is telling them the truth. CNN never tells them the truth.
No, throw in MSNBC as well. Their ratings have plummeted.
Because Trump is not there anymore to...
Yeah, the bash.
He made them very, very rich, by the way.
He did.
He made them very rich.
He did. He did. The more they hated Trump, the more they were able to sell advertising.
Now, what happened in Afghanistan is simple. You don't go to a war with a people and you don't know who they are and what they think. Sun Tzu was a Chinese author in 500 BC. He wrote a book called The Art of War.
Yep.
The Art of War, not The Art of the Deal of Trump, The Art of War. And in his book, the summation of the book was simple. It says, if you know yourself and your enemy in 100 battles, you win every single one of them. If you know yourself but not the enemy, in 100 battles, you win 50 and lose 50. If you don't know yourself or the enemy in 100 battles, you lose every single one of them. The West has been losing every single battle with Islam. Why? Because they don't understand Islam. And yet Islam is very simple to understand. They are the enemies of every human being on the planet who is not a Muslim. They will never integrate in Western society. I'm talking about fundamentalist Muslims. Again, Sharia-compliant Muslims. They can never assimilate or integrate. Look what's happening in Europe. In Europe, in France alone, there are 750 areas of no-go zones. Controlled by whom? By Muslims. There are 300 of them in London, in England. There are tons of them in every Western country in Europe. No-go zone, that means Sharia-compliant zones, that the citizens of the country, like French people, cannot go in.
Right.
Will there be a civil war? Yes, there most probably will be a civil war. There is always a time, it comes where the people who are being oppressed by an immigrant group, who is a minority, the majority will say, hey, this is our country. You came to us. We gave you security. We're giving you financial help. We're giving you health and education. And you are subverting us. You have a choice. You assimilate or you leave. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a couple of points in that what you just said that stood out to me. One on assimilation. One other place that I see where there is a clear divide between an Islamic population and everyone else are in prisons, right? I usually see Muslims have their own place in the prison, and then you have, I guess, supremacists and everybody else have their own little enclave. But it seems like, from what I've noticed, and also from our earlier conversations, prisoners become converted more to Islam than Christianity or any other religion. Why do you think that is? What is it about the Islamic religion that the imams are able to convert prisoners more so to their cause than, say, priests and preachers over to Christianity?
It's a lovely question. And I think I mentioned it to you before.
Mm.
Islam gives the criminal exactly what he wants. So the Quran, let me put it in excellent terms. The Quran is music to the ears of people who are criminal. Why? Because the criminal in the prison system is either a rapist, a murderer, a thief, or something. Islam justifies all of these if you're doing it against non-Muslims. It justifies, it sanctifies it. Of course, the priest hasn't got it, a chance in hell of converting a prisoner to Christianity, which says, love your neighbor, be careful, be nice. A criminal is not in the mood to love somebody. The criminal is in the system because he is a criminal. And Islam is music to the mind or the ears of a criminal.
Can you share with me some verses around that? Because I know someone will hear that and they'll be instantly offended, saying that the Quran doesn't teach that. Could you give some chapters or verses around that? Because I know someone will complain about that.
Okay. Let them complain from here to eternity because I don't give a damn. Simple. I'll tell you why. Mm. If they can prove me wrong, let them call in. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Al-Baqarah. I'm going to recite and people can listening can Google it. Al-Baqarah, chapter 2, verse 216. We're talking about jihad. The Quran says, jihad, holy fighting in Allah's cause, is ordained for you Muslims, though you dislike it. And it may be that you dislike a thing which is good for you, and that you like a thing which is bad for you. Allah knows, but you do not know. So when I say it's mandated in the Quran, there's absolutely no doubt. It's written. By the way, in innumerable verses in Muhammad's Quran and Hadith, jihad means only one thing. Physical warfare in the cause of Allah. In Arabic, for those who understand Arabic, qital fi sabil Allah. Again, it's not negotiable.
Hold on. I've always heard that like jihad is like a spiritual thing. Like you're fighting the bad. Right.
That's what they tell you. That's not right. True. It was never. Jihad is never a spiritual treasure. I'll tell you why. I'm quoting now from the hadith, the traditions about Muhammad. Okay. Sahih Muslim hadith 4631. Ladies and gentlemen, you can Google it as I'm talking to you. Abu Hurairah says, I heard Muhammad say, I love that I should be killed in Allah's cause, jihad. Then I should be brought back to life and be killed again in jihad and repeated it three times. So if the mentor of Islam, the leader of Islam, Muhammad, is telling his followers how jihad is so important, of course they love it. They have to follow him. Sahih al-Bukhari, that's a different, by the way, hadith. The first one from Sahih Muslim. Sahih al-Bukhari, hadith 4.50, narrated by Anas bin Malik. The Prophet said, a single endeavor of fighting in Allah's cause, hital fi sabilillah, jihad, is better than the world and whatever is in it. Now, say, tell me, please, what do you understand from this?
I'm careful to say.
No, I mean, really, all I'm doing, I'm not attacking Islam. I'm revealing what Islam says. Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 51. O ye who believe, Muslims, take not the Jews, Yahud, and the Christians, Nasara, for your friends and protectors. They are but friends and protectors to each other, and he amongst you that turns to them for friendship is of them. Mr. Stroud, this last sentence, and he amongst you who turns to them for friendship is of them.
Ah, he went mute again. There it is.
That last verse, and he amongst you who befriends the Jews and Christians is one of them, means that any Muslim who befriends Jews and Christians becomes an enemy of Islam.
Anyone who befriends Jews or Muslims Jews or Christians is an enemy of Islam.
Of course.
And that's according to the scripture you just read there. That is interesting. I'm sure it's interesting to a lot of people who are hearing this for the first time.
It is interesting, but it's frightening.
Right.
It's really frightening. I'm quoting what the Muslims are reading. I'm not quoting something which is not theirs. It is exactly what they have.
So I know you cited the fundamentalist Muslims who go by chapter and verse, and maybe they're not looking at it from a different point of view than so many others. But it is very frightening that is in the work, in the book that they get their religious beliefs on.
I'll tell you what confuses most people. The Quran went through two periods of time. In the earlier period, when Muhammad was without an army, from the year 610 to 622, he had no army. He was in Mecca, and he was reciting verses which were conciliatory. It says, "Lakum dinakum walidini." You have your religion, I have mine. There should be no compulsion in religion. All these verses were the Mecca period, at the early stages, when he had no army. But when he moved to Medina and created the first organized crime syndicate in human history, the next 10 years, all the verses were aggressive, intolerant, racist, and hate-mongering. So you have a contradiction. One part of the Quran says there should be no compulsion in religion, and the next verse in another chapter says, anybody who doesn't follow Islam, you kill them.
It's like you have two different authors at work there.
It is schizophrenia, split personality. That's exactly what it is. This is what confuses most people. But you've got to study the subject and then come to your conclusion. It is two periods of time, the Mecca period and the Medina period. And the Medina period, the verses of the Medina period abrogate means overrule all the earlier verses. Because in the Quran, there is an abrogation verse. It says, Allah revealed verses at the beginning, but he changed his mind. That's exactly what it says. He changed his mind. He overruled them. For example, in one of the earlier verses, every Muslim can fight 10 non-Muslims, which is 1 against 10, which is almost impossible to achieve.
Right.
And the Muslims, his own people who believed in him, objected. They said, no, but that's impossible. So a verse appeared, another revelation came, says every Muslim can fight 2.
Huh.
But that's not the only one. There are 71 such changes in the Quran. 71. It's called abrogating and abrogated verses. Al-Nasikh wal-Mansukh. If there is somebody who he understands Arabic, will understand exactly what I'm telling them. Al-Nasikh wal-Mansukh. Abrogating and abrogated verses. The later verses of the Medina period abrogate, overrule, and negate the earlier verses of the Mecca period.
Interesting.
Personality. Yes, I know. Look. But everything about Islam is simple. Honestly, nothing in it is difficult. It's crystal clear. It says the best people on earth are Muslims. The best people, not anybody else. The best people on earth are Muslims. That's superiority. And it tells you in Al-Imran, chapter 3, verse 85, it says, if anyone desires a religion other than Islam, submission to Allah, never will it be accepted of him. That's racism. That's superiority.
I mean, is that why you think the left embraces it so much?
Of course, yes, absolutely. It's the music to their ear. This is important.
Please.
Al-Anfal, chapter 8, verse 55. Verily, the vilest creatures in the sight of Allah are those who are bent on denying the truth. That means people who are not Muslims. The vilest creatures in the sight of Allah are non-Muslims. These are not my words. These are the Quran.
What do you say to people who maybe they were born and raised in the Muslim faith, and maybe they hadn't heard these verses before. I know there are people who grew up Christian who probably some verses in the Bible they hadn't heard of before. But how do you reconcile? How would someone reconcile their faith knowing that they would not go out and, or they don't think of themselves as superior to other people just simply because they're Muslim, and they don't subscribe to the fundamentalist part of Islam that you pointed out, but they don't want to abandon the faith? I mean, what do you say to someone like that?
I can't say anything to them. This is their own belief system. I'm not here to convert Muslims out or in. My job is to reveal the facts. It is up to the Muslims to decide whether what the Quran is telling them is fair or not fair. Are you with me? I'm not here for them. All I'm saying is, look, guys, this is what the Quran says. Humanity is split into two parts. You Muslims against 80% of humanity are not Muslims. And your Quran says you can pillage them, rape them, plunder them, conquer them, and enslave them. Do you think it's correct? I ask that question. I wrote an article, which I sent it to you. If the Christian Bible uses Sharia against the Muslims, I reversed it. I reversed the verses of the Quran and assumed they're coming from the Bible. And I'm asking the Muslims, would you accept that? Would you accept it that the Christians and the Jews will call you kuffar? Would you accept it that Christians and the Jews will say you are subhuman? Would you accept it that that the Christians and Jews allows their people to rape you, plunder you, conquer you? Are you with me? I reversed it.
Right.
You don't have time to read all my articles, I know.
They are very interesting articles, though, I must say. And I encourage any and everyone listening to definitely check them out. I do reference them from time to time, that is for sure. Okay. That is for sure.
Because that article in particular, because I reversed it. I reversed their verses against them. As if the Quran is pro-Israel, pro the Jews and Christians against the Muslims. And it's really, really devastating.
Sure it is, no doubt. I assume this is what, well, for the benefit of those listening, you are careful about your security, and I don't know your face for those who may be curious. We're talking and I'm recording an audio of it, but I still don't know what you look like. Is it because you've been so outspoken about Islam that you take such security
they
measures?
They want me dead. Yes, they want me dead. I mean, I asked them, why do you want me dead? Why don't you just prove me to be a liar and disprove everything I have and discredit me? Why do you want to silence me? They want to silence me because they cannot defend the indefensible. How can they defend a faith when I'm revealing exactly what it says? I'm not perverting it. I'm not taking it out of context. I never take it out of context. This is exactly what it says. Prove me wrong. If it doesn't say what it says, then I'm a liar. So prove me I'm a liar. Tell the world I'm a liar. And then I have to retract. I've got to shut up. But why should I shut up when I'm revealing the truth? I will never apologize for telling the truth, ever. And especially with leftists. The more you apologize, the more they will cut your throat.
True.
But if you're telling the truth, never apologize for telling the truth, ever. You hurt somebody's feeling, to hell with them and their feelings. I'm not interested in feelings. I'm interested in revealing the facts. It's like when I talk to about Hitler's Mein Kampf. When I reveal the facts about Hitler's Mein Kampf, am I being anti-German? The answer, no. I'm revealing what Hitler says in Mein Kampf. I'm not saying it's anti-German. I'm not anti-German. I'm not even anti-Nazi. When I'm revealing the facts about the Quran, doesn't mean I'm anti-Muslim. That's not anti-Muslim. Anti-Muslim is when you say things which are untrue about Islam. I never do that. I don't have to. Islam self-destructs. with its own words, like I'm showing you now. It self-destructs. I don't have to do anything. It is racist. It's obnoxious. It's hypocritical, duplicitous, intolerant, completely intolerant. By the way, the tragedy in the system, in the prison system in America, the people who convert to Islam are mostly black.
Right.
The very people whose ancestors were slaughtered by the hundreds of over 140 million black Africans were murdered so that 14 million of them would be sold to the Americans. Did you know that also?
I did know that. And I also knew that a lot of Muslims enslaved a lot of whites for several hundred years.
Correct.
Prior to slavery in America.
Yeah, 1.5 million. But the most important one, the genocide against the black people. Black people are called Abid. Abid is a plural for word Abd. Abd means slave.
So,
I'll repeat it again. Jim, I'll repeat it again. The color black in Arabic is Aswad. It's a color. Black, Aswad.
Right.
Abyad is white. But because they look down on black people of Africa, they call them Abid, slaves. Even today, if you talk to an Arab, when they speak about the black person, they call them Abid, black, means slave. They associate slavery with the black people. And they did the most atrocious genocide in history. The Nazis killed 6 million Jews. Okay, fine. But the Arabs, the Muslims, slaughtered over 140 million blacks, over 110 million Hindus, several 10 million of Buddhists. We're talking about genocide on a colossal scale. Why did they do that? Because they're called kuffar. They are infidels. They are animals. They are not human beings. I just recited to you the verse. Non-Muslims are animals. They can be plundered, raped, enslaved, conquered. Anything you want to do to them, you can do as a Muslim. And again, I said, if it's offensive to the ears of somebody who's stupid, that's their problem, not mine.
If someone wanted to read some of your writings, I know you have a book out and you have a blog. Please tell us where they can look you up.
All they have to do is Google my name, Al Rasooli, ALRASSOOLI. Google my name, go to my website. It will blow your mind.
Yes, it will.
It will. It will blow your mind. Obviously.
It definitely will.
Yeah.
That's how I came across you from your controversial writings, which are, and I remember, and I'll just throw this out there, because I remember our first conversation as we were talking and you were bringing out the different verses from the Quran, and you said, Google it. And I was Googling it in real time, and there it was in black and white. I was just blown away by
that. You did that. Yeah. One thing I've got to explain to you, please, to Americans. They tell us that Allah is the same as the God of the Bible. That's a big lie. That's the biggest lie that has ever been insinuated into the human consciousness. Allah of the Quran is most definitely not the same as the God of the Bible. Can I prove this? Yes. Chapter 248. Read it. It's on my website.
Okay. For the benefit of those just listening right now, though, could you maybe say what that is? I still want to encourage everyone to go to your website for
sure. The question is, the title is Allah the same as the God of the Bible? Google it.
Okay.
Under IQ Rasooli, and it will tell you exactly why it can't be done. Exactly. And if you're a Christian, you'll be shocked, because one of the verses that destroys Christianity says, Jesus did not die on the cross, a lookalike died.
That's what the Quran says.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
I did not know that. That's something new to me. Okay. I've never heard that before.
But that's something new to most of the people who are listening now. To 98% of Americans, it's not new. It's new, definitely. 98%. I'm not exaggerating when I say 98%. You have 535 people in Congress. 535. Most of them have got no No knowledge of Islam. Zero knowledge of Islam. Zero. And some of them fought in Afghanistan and Iraq. They fought among Muslims several years in Afghanistan, Iraq, and they still are clueless. How do you explain it? I don't know. I don't want to explain it. I haven't the brains to explain it. I can't explain it.
You've been very generous with your time. I knew this would be controversial, and you did not disappoint. I do appreciate it. I'm going to, on the screen now is links to your book and to your blog, and I want to ask everyone to sort of check it out, and I want to ask everyone to try to disprove what he says.
Absolutely, yes.
Look at it.
I have $1.5 million worth of challenges. Get rich.
Explain that again really quickly as we fade out.
Have $1.5 million worth of challenges on my internet, on my books, and in my talk shows. $200,000 in each case. $200,000 in each case.
For anyone who can disprove what you say,
absolutely.
Can offer them
that. Absolutely. Okay. For example, is jihad a spiritual struggle? $200,000 says no. Prove me wrong. Is the hijab mandated in the Quran? $200,000 says no. It doesn't exist in the Quran, the hijab.
The head covering that women wear.
It doesn't exist in the Quran. They tell you it is in the Quran, it doesn't exist. $200,000. Go and collect.
Okay.
The hijab as a covering of a woman does not exist in the Quran. Full stop.
Wow.
It doesn't matter what CARE says. It doesn't matter what the Muslims tell you. Prove me wrong and gain $200,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How many have tried to challenge you on this stuff?
Nobody ever challenged me. Many of my talk shows, the hosts tried to bring Muslims against me. Not one of them came. Not one of them was willing to come. Not one. CAIR, C-A-I-R, the Council of American Islamic Relations, the most subversive entity in America, the most anti-American entity in the United States. The FBI knows about them. The CIA knows about them. Everybody knows about them, and they're still in existence. I have asked them to debate me many times. Not one of them ever did. They know they will lose. In 60 seconds, I destroy them. I repeat my word, 60 seconds.
Interesting. Just interesting. You always have me scratching my head here like, wow. IQ, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate you being here, and I hope this isn't the last time you're on the Jim Stroud Show.
I hope so, too. I have as much fun as you have. If you are having fun, I'm having more fun than you have. God bless you. Take care.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, my time is up. I thank you for yours. I'll see you again real soon right here with a brand new episode. Until next time, bye-bye.